Please See Attached podcast, where we delve into everything digital marketing and discuss the strange, wonderful, and sometimes dangerous ways in which the internet has been shaping our lives. I'm Steve Gould, and I host this podcast along with my colleagues, Daphna Ben-Yehoshua, Jensen Lee, Matt Plouffe, and Sean Rosenthal. In today's episode, we're going to talk with Sean Rosenthal, our Director of Business Development at Onboard Digital, about the 10 things you should know when you're hiring a marketing agency for your business. While some businesses do their marketing in-house, others do not have the time and or knowledge to do that and opt for hiring an agency like us. But there are many, many marketing agencies out there. And when you're not from that world, sometimes it's hard to know what to look out for. So we're going to tap into Sean and he's going to break down those questions with us and help everyone understand how to pick the best marketing agency for your business. So we're going to get right into it. Hi, Sean. It's great to have you joining us once again. Before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about your experience before you joined us at Onboard?
Absolutely. Well, I'm what you would refer to as an OG digital marketer. I've been doing digital marketing and marketing for over 20 years now. And when I got started marketing, for corporations, digital was, called interactive. And a lot of brands were trying to figure out how to get online and how to market their products and services in this new online digital space. I was fortunate that I got to start my career off working for Fortune 100 companies like General Motors. I worked for a Fortune 100 or 500 company, Life Fitness. So I got to really cut my teeth early on in really trying to develop brands online and take them to, different levels through digital marketing, through websites, through email marketing. We didn't really have Google AdWords until probably about 5 or 6 years after I got started. But, and over the last 20 years, I've been fortunate to work with not only big companies, but tech companies, tech startups, different types of industries like legal, dental. And, it's watching the industry grow has been really exciting for me, and being mostly on the client side. Actually, this is the first time working with you guys that I'm on the agency side. I've been exposed to kind of how do I process bringing a partner, an agency partner on board, because it's a very important part of what I've done with all the brands and all the companies I've worked for. You want somebody, obviously, that's going to help your business grow and succeed. So, I appreciate you guys bringing me into this conversation, because it's a really important thing for the client side and, to understand how to properly pick a partner and develop a long-term relationship with them.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I know you've geographically been in a few places as well, from Toronto, Detroit, Chicago. So, you've got experience all across the board, which I think is awesome. And, we're glad to have you on our side of the table right now. And so let's get into the topic of the day. And let's say I'm a small business and I'm selling artisanal vegan chocolates, and I want to hire an agency to help me reach more customers through Google, social media, and e-commerce channels like Amazon. But there's a lot of marketing agencies out there, and I don't know where to start. So Sean, let's get into this by saying, the first thing you got to do is pick an agency. But before your agency partner search begins, determine what you need. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I think you got to look at what you're trying to accomplish. Are you redesigning your website? Are you looking to develop, digital advertising strategy? You want to put together a checklist and be prepared to, really know what your goals and your end game is before you even dive into, the selection process.
And having done this before multiple times, I guess you develop your own kind of menu or checklist per se. And then how many times have you come across things from the agency that you didn't even think of that? Yeah. You did need.
Yeah. That's a great point. Cause as you go through the process, you learn a lot about, your additional needs that maybe you didn't think about. And it really, you may want to start with a short list. And as you go through the process and start talking to agencies, you start growing that list. I think you have to be realistic. And you need to know, most budget is we can get into that a little later as far as the importance of understanding what your budget is. But you're just making sure that you know what the end game is before you jump in from a certain extent.
Yeah, I find, having talked to a lot of clients, especially over the last year, that sometimes you come across clients that really, really get it and really understand it. And sometimes you come across the clients that really need more help. Either way, they don't have the resources in-house to do it. So I think that starting point is great. And we actually use the menu or checklist as an part of our offerings when we have our select program. So it makes sense from both sides of the table, I think. Matt, Daphna, anything to add on the checklist or menu piece?
Like you, I've seen clients come to us and they're not really sure what they want. Like, they're feeling kind of lost. And I think one good way to go about it is check out what your competitors are doing, you know, on digital. Like, what kind of website do they have? Like, what's their presence on social media? What digital channels they're using? And that, you know, that can help you in like deciding like what you need and what you want, also because you're going to compete against those brands, obviously. So you need to be using, you know, the same channels, the same techniques.
I think it's a great point. I mean, you should always be checking out your competition throughout your business existence regardless. But, you know, in this specific case, when you're looking for an agency partner and you're planning a digital strategy or plan, what a great idea. See what other people are doing and pull some ideas. And can you make it better? Can you do something a little differently that works better for your brand, et cetera? So great point, Daphna. Thank you for that. Let's move on to number two. If you're looking to align your business with a digital marketing agency that has experience in your industry, where do you start for that? I mean, I guess that's just a question you ask. Like, hey, Mr. Agency Man, have you had experience with artisanal vegan chocolates before?
You know, obviously having an agency with experience in your industry is key. I don't think it's the most important thing. I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, you're not going to find a lot of agencies with artisanal vegan chocolate experience out there. But, you know, you want to look, really, I think this point's of looking at what other clients they have and what they've done, kind of look at what have they built website wise, you know, just to kind of get a sense of their portfolio and then kind of figure out how does that align with what your project is about. Your checklist that you've created.
Well, yeah, because I mean, for our vegan chocolates, it could be related to another product that the agency has worked with a similar strategy, not necessarily a similar product. But if we're looking to create an e-commerce store and they've done 100 e-commerce stores with Shopify and another 50 with WordPress or whatever.
Or if they've helped another brand like in the food space, like a small local brand, maybe even another like vegan brand, you know, that's not necessarily food, but they're familiar with the language.
Absolutely. And vegan is its own channel, I believe. So it's important that you're reaching and using the right audiences and keywords, et cetera, to get the right audience in for your product. So I agree with your point, Sean, that just because the agency doesn't necessarily have experience with artisanal vegan chocolates doesn't mean that they can't help you with your product. So great point. And remember to have an open mind, I guess, is part of the answer here.
One other thing to add, I think, with this as well is as you narrow down your list of agency partners through your process, you want to look at getting references, you know, if it's from comparable types of industries or businesses, and just talk to those guys, shoot an email. Hey, you guys have worked with these guys. It's a good way to kind of get a feel. I don't think they're going to say anything bad typically if they're still working with them. But sometimes, you know, if you put together a nice list of questions and they're poignant, talking about deliverable times and things like that, gives you a good understanding of their skill set and overall abilities.
Keep an open mind. And, you know, we'll talk about it later on, but relationship does mean something. But moving on to our next point here, can the digital agency deliver what they promise? I mean, we've all been out there and purchased cars and purchased those hard selling items. When you guys remember going to Future Shop, when those guys worked on commission, there'd always be a harder sell. So if it's too good to be true, it probably is. So we should be careful. Have you ever come across that, Sean, in your experience?
All the time. You know, I think especially some of the younger agencies, depending on the situation, they'll promise the moon. And you got to be careful of some of that stuff, you know, especially when it comes to pricing, especially when it comes to, you know, deliverable times. Everything is on the table and they can make anything happen. Well, that's probably not going to be the case once you get down to business. This is definitely true with a lot of young agencies because they're trying to get in there and they wear themselves too thin. And at the end of the day,
a good product, yeah. the quality could suffer from
exactly
the overpromise, exactly. Yeah, or under priced. Moving on, number four, what tools are they using and are they the best in the business? So we all know there's a ton of software and tools and platforms and so many things out there to use. And we, you know, we pride ourselves on keeping up to date with this stuff. But I guess when you're the client on the client side, it's important that you have some understanding of it so you know what's going to be used to help. Really, I think this is about metrics and analytics. Is that right, Sean?
Well, no, I think that's a separate point. This is more about the tools to execute than the tools to track and measure. So for instance, looking at mail delivery systems like MailChimp or looking at tools like SEMrush, what are the tools they're using to help build and optimize your marketing strategies? You know, for me, I'm an in-house guy. There's two types of in-house people, depending on the company. The ones that are very hands-on and manage the tools, a lot of the tools by themselves. And then the other one, let the agency handle the tools. I just want the data. And that's something to take into consideration, you know, looking at the company, because that, it, you know, costs a lot more, obviously, for an agency to do a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to tools and technology. But, you know, looking at what they're using and how they're using those tools to help, again, meet your checklist requirement and goals is important.
For sure. And it is, you know, as you said, it ties into making sure we get the right data to optimize, analyze, and try to ensure the best success for the campaigns that we're doing. So there's so many out there. I mean, we do use a lot of technology and tools on our campaigns, and they're great. I mean, technology, when you use it properly and have the right piece, is so very helpful, and it's going to help the client too in the end.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, one thing to note also is looking at when an agency is pitching to you and giving them an understanding of how they use the tools, it's key for the client to kind of look at it from a cost perspective. You know, once you start farming out a lot of the tools to the agency, it does increase costs. You've got to kind of manage budget consideration. Do you want to do the MailChimp distribution in-house or do you want to have your agency handle that? Because there are costs. One thing if they create the email and then you deliver it, it's another thing if they create the email, distribute it through their tools and then track and all that. So just from a budgetary constraint or just conscious kind of point to think about that as well.
Well, yeah. And I think it's a good question from the client side to say, you know, what is included in this proposal? And specifically, are you going to include an email campaign? Are you going to include everything that goes with it? There's so many little pieces, but you're right. So, you know, if you can do it in-house, you're certainly going to have cost savings. And if you can't, make sure the agency is able to handle it.
As I got older, I farmed out as much as possible. I kind of like, you guys can handle that now. I don't need to sit and utilize constant contact in a dark room looking at HTML. Line code.
So. Sean, you know, so these tools, like we started off this number four with, it does tie into the reporting and analytics. And I think that a big part about what an agency can deliver is also the reporting of the data and the success, hopefully, of the campaign. So, you know, one thing to look for is, does the agency create effective reporting? And how important have you found reporting to be as you went along from the beginning to now?
This is the most important thing for me as a marketer. As technology has grown and digital marketing has become very pervasive. It used to be digital marketing was its own little kind of part of a marketing team. Now, marketing is digital marketing, 90% of it. I've done print, I've done radio, I've done billboards. But at the end of the day, you know, digital marketing is successful as it is because of the reporting that it provides. Being able to boil down every cent, hopefully, you spend to the success of acquisitions and revenue. It depends on obviously the industry and what your end goals are. But at the end of the day, we're all here to make money and grow your business. And using the right tools, or excuse me, the right types of measurement tools will help you justify your job day in, day out.
Well, isn't it amazing to think that before digital, any analytics coming in where, well, our subscription base is this, our reader base is this, we're going to guarantee you this many impressions. And based on our research, this is what it should turn out to in sales. But, you know, there is no definitive data at that time. But now it's completely the opposite. I mean, you can measure just about anything that you want with a digital campaign. And I think especially for the marketing departments on the client side, it's super important for them to have the data so they can say, hey, our budget was spent and this is what our budget returned. So when we go next year to the budget table, this is what we need. So it definitely helps out. And I agree with you that it is probably the most important thing.
It holds the marketer accountable. You know, we can't just throw money at things, though it happens. At the end of the day, there's going to be a bottom line. And that's part of the process when you do bring an agency on board is setting up those reporting tools, making sure if it's, you know, tracking stuff on Web Trends or you know, Google Analytics or whatever to justify traffic and then, you know, conversions and all that stuff. It's a key importance to all marketing. Marketing first, technologist second, you know?
How difficult was it for you, Sean, going back to the beginning of your career to justify those interactive budgets when you were asking for money?
Oh, it reminds me of a story when I was working at General Motors in that brown building in downtown Detroit. I believe it's the Renaissance Center. And we used to have an agency and they would do email marketing campaigns for us. And I remember one email marketing campaign had 50,000 names in the list. And that campaign they charged us $50,000. I'm not exaggerating. So we've come a long way. We're paying one email for 50,000 emails. $1 an email. Can you imagine? They were having a field day because you know what? There weren't, oh God, those guys were enjoying life because they were an early on digital agent. You know, they were taking advantage of a big brand like GM who didn't have any, you know, they were trying to take the Titanic and fit it down the Suez Canal.
Sideways.
Which actually is sideways. So, you know, nowadays, yeah, email is a very effective, cost-effective way to reach a large audience, you know, pennies compared to, you know. So as the data has become available and understanding the value of these types of communications and types of marketing strategies, you start to learn how to be smart about things.
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. That's a dollar an email. Wow. Because you just, they're thinking is, well, okay, guys, let's go. Let's get another 100,000 names because that's another $100,000 per client. Per campaign.
Here's how they looked at it, probably. It was they were comparing it to their print type of marketing and maybe 50 cents or a dollar for a print piece, right?
Yeah.
You know, glossy piece. So this is how they line. That was how people, you know, early on in the industry, they compared it. Oh, yeah, well, we do yep. catalog stuff and that costs $2 a thing.
But like, think about email 20 years ago, guys, and how much, you know, how much spam were you getting? And you probably read every email that you got because it was still such a novelty. So they were probably getting a really good open rate. Right on. Well, let's move on. Number six, do they practice what they preach? So if an agency is promising you big marketing campaigns or a professional, fabulous new website, but they don't have their own, is that a warning sign?
You want to make sure these guys, if they're promising to do your social media campaigns, you know, it makes sense to go look at what they're doing as far as creating content in the social world. And, you know, how good is that content? How many people are, you know, following or liking? If they're going to handle your stuff, you want to make sure that they know what they're doing. I can promise I can create a social campaign tomorrow for you. But if I don't have experience in at least showing the experience and also looking at some of their other clients and what they're doing as well makes sense. But I think any good agency that's worth their weight is creating content via social channels, you know, things like a good podcast or a good blog. They are very important when shopping around and getting a sense of the value that agency is going to bring.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Sean. And let's move on then to number seven, size matters. So does it matter, Sean?
It's a great question. So, you know, you really need to look at your business's marketing budget first and foremost. I think budget really, you know, larger agencies have a lot of mouths to feed, so you know it could be more expensive doing business with them over time. There are small boutique agencies that charge a lot, but at the end of the day, you want to make sure that the capabilities of the agency you're aligning yourself with, big or small, and the prices that they're, you know, for their services make sense for you in the long term. Like I said, you know, a small agency may be less expensive, but are they going to be able to meet, you know, all your goals? A large agency might be too expensive over time because they, you know, they have a lot of folks working for them and it adds up. So you got to take that into consideration when going through the process. I usually like to mix it up when I'm looking at agencies. I like to look at maybe a large one, mid-size, small. You kind of get a sense of, you know, maybe one that, you know, I don't want to waste anybody's time, but you definitely want to kind of look at a variety of sizes because they definitely have an impact on the overall success of the relationship over time.
And again, I guess, you know, talking to some past clients or current clients to see what their experience was like with the agency will help answer that question. Because sometimes you go to a large agency thinking you're going to get the benefit of their experience and of the large clients that they have dealt with and are currently dealing with, and that's going to help you. But sometimes it doesn't. And then on the small side, are they set up to handle all the business that you need done with resources, whether it's in-house or contracted out? So there's lots of options, I think the most important thing is to make sure you're comfortable with the people that you end up doing business with. And, you know, this leads into number eight, is their pricing fair? So I guess price matters, right, Sean? Like you're going to.
Absolutely. I mean, again, you got to look at what your budget is and you got to look at what this agency is capable of doing. And you know, it adds up. You know, it depends. You want to use them for specific things like just doing SEM or are they going to be a one-stop shop for all your marketing, digital marketing needs? And, you know, making sure as you go through the process of interviewing agencies and figuring out what direction you want to go with, looking at the pricing. And when you start boiling it down to two or three, start on a level of negotiations and understanding, okay, well, if you guys are going to handle this and that, you know, let's find a happy medium where, you know, the company can do what they need to do. And obviously the agency needs to make money. So you got to find a point where it, you know, budgetary, you know, requirements are met and pricing is equally beneficial for both sides of the table.
Yeah. And I obviously, when it comes down to talking dollars and cents, it is sensitive yet very important. And I think agencies should have, like, I know we practice this, guys, I can speak for all of us here that, you know, we try to price fairly, but you know, we're not going to price ourselves out of the job. And in the same sense, we're not going to underprice ourselves just to get the job because, you know, it is business and we are in business to make money and help our clients and maybe not necessarily in that order of importance, but if we can't stay afloat as any business, then we won't be able to help anybody, including ourselves. So it's a fine balance, as is everything in life. So, okay, coming to the end here, number nine, ask questions before signing a contract. I mean, anybody's going to tell you that, but what kind of questions are you going to ask?
So, you know, as far as asking questions at the end of the whole process, when you're about to, you know, negotiate and sign the contract, I think a lot of the you've asked a lot of questions up to this point. Hopefully you're not waiting to the contract to be filled out. But I think, you know, you want to make sure everything on both sides of the table are in order. I think a lot of agencies, just depending on the size, you know, the contracts can be a little dicey. You know, they're creative people. And sometimes contracts need to have questions addressed, you know, throughout, you know, the final process, because if you miss something and then you sign it or something doesn't make sense, it can affect things. You know, I think, you're entering into a business relationship, and you want to make sure that, you know, that you're both mutually mindful of things going forward. And I think
that's the important point right there, Sean. You know, you're entering into a business relationship and an agreement, and yeah, ask questions to make sure you're comfortable, just as we as an agency would ask questions to make sure we're comfortable. And I don't know. I mean, I read through contracts a lot and we use them a lot. An insertion order is a contract. A SAL goes with a master service agreement. It's a contract. And everything we do is contracted, but it's for the protection of both the client and the agency. So yeah, super important. Yeah, right on. Okay, number 10. And this one I love. To me, you know, analytics and reporting, so important, right, for one thing. But, you know, would you have dinner or drinks with the agency?
Absolutely. You know, through my 20 plus year career, I've worked with a lot of agency people. And, you know, you work closely and it's important that these people are the top of their game and the best that you can have to accomplish your marketing, you know, goals. But you do spend a lot of time with these people and you do have a lot of conversations. And sometimes you need to kind of lighten up. You know, marketing is about being creative and having fun. But, you know, I've had some of the best times in my professional career, you know, going out and having drinks with the people I do business with, you know, agency side. So, and then when you get on the phone the next day and you say, oh, last night was great, you know, let's get back to business. But you also have that freedom to talk and express and be honest. You need that type of connectivity to a certain extent to really be successful.
Yeah, so bottom line is relationships are important and it does matter. And, you know, you kind of get to know your client, whether they like to go out or not go out. I've had clients that couldn't care less. I get a great relationship over the phone or if we meet in person, got a lot of business, then they had no interest in anything else but that. And that's fine. So, you work the crowd, know your audience, whatever you want to call it. But the relationship is important regardless of what you end up doing with them. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think, and again, doesn't have to be like going out together or anything, but even just like keeping that positive tone in emails or phone calls or meetings, you know, and making sure they're satisfied and answering, like, you know,
it's important. Yeah, yeah, you're right, Daphna, because it, you know, one day something could go south for whatever reason. Something breaks, somebody forgot to do something. You know, people, we're all humans and there will be mistakes and things happen. And when you have that feel good relationship comfort level with your client, it's a lot easier to fix it and make it right. So Sean, thanks again. That was awesome. And now before we say goodbye, it's time for some digital etiquette. In digital etiquette, we discuss what is appropriate or inappropriate when interacting with others online. Our topic for today, is it okay to unfollow or unfriend a relative or a friend if they're posting content you don't want to see? It could be offensive, anti-masking, super preachy, etc., etc. So Daphna, I'm going to go to you first on this one. What are your thoughts?
I would say, you know, it really depends who the person is, how close the relationship is, if you're willing to sabotage it or not. I think that's a major factor. And also, like, what type of content it is that you don't want to see. Is it just like, oh no, like that person is posting another photo of their kid, like we talked about on a recent podcast, that like bombarding us like with photos of their kids? Or is it like more, you know, they're anti-vaxxers and you just don't want to see that content?
I mean, if it gets to the point where you're uncomfortable and getting pissed off looking at what people are posting, there's so many options now, at least on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, you can still remain friends with the person, but you won't see anything that they post.
And yeah, you can unfollow them.
Yeah, but if you unfollow them, do they know that you've unfollowed them?
No.
Or is it that person that goes through their friend list and say, Jesus, where did Daphna go? She used to follow me, now she doesn't. And if that's the kind of person, then probably you wanted to unfollow them a long time ago. I would do it. If it was really getting to me, I don't really care who it is, I would unfollow them. I've done it to a lot of people who are like, I don't need to see this crap anymore because it's a waste of my time. I mean, you guys know how much time we spend online just being in the business we're in, plus being the people that we are on top of that. So if there's some crap that I don't need to see, I'm happy to take it out of my feed. The beauty of social, right, Matt?
Exactly. You can do it unsuspiciously. I guess my whole stance on the thing is you can mute them. So if it's something that's temporary, elections or I don't know, anything that's relevant in politics or social media, and they're just on a different side of you, easy to ignore and just put away. If it's something that lasts a little longer, you know, you can mute them. And I think some of the sites give you an option to do it for a certain amount of time or anything like that. I know, for example, I have a second cousin in the States who is a MAGA hat wearer. And for the last 4 years, you know, I did have to mute them. I got zero notifications from them. They never showed up on my feed. It wasn't until this election cycle where I was like, I wonder what they're saying now. And it was the same nonsense. So I just kept it muted. Again, it's a cousin. I think with Facebook, it's a little bit easier to see who follows you because, you know, maybe she went onto my mom's page and saw that if I defriended her, we don't have that mutual friend in common. And being family, it's a little more direct. But I think if it was someone who was a friend or a close acquaintance that, you know, I would actually say something before unfollowing them, be like, engage that, like, if this is all that they're going to talk about, like, I think you have other things to worry about than your social media presence, but it might be something I engage with before making the step to unfollow them, because I think the shameless part of it comes when it's all over and done with, if it is ever over and done with, and you interact and you need to follow them again, and they're sort of like...
Yeah, but that just shows that you care about that person
exactly.
A little bit more, or enough to actually speak up and say something.
Yeah.
Some people, I mean, like, I've been unfollowed and unfriended, and I only knew because I saw something pop up somewhere else. I'm like, hey, I used to be friends with this person, and then I'm like, eh, too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't let it get to you. But I etiquette wise I don't know. Sean, what do you think? I mean, you're pretty active in social media, and I'm sure, you know, some people have unfriended you.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, let's just explain this. I don't really, you know, I have some very extreme views and I go after trolls. And let's just say, talk about a MAGA hat wearing folk. I feed on that. Why I do it is a whole other conversation, yeah. But I don't mind if you don't, you know, walk it out. That's your business. And I've seen,
I mean, I've watched Sean some conversations on Facebook. And honestly, you know, when you're going up against these trolls, and they really are trolls, I get entertainment value out of it. So I appreciate what you do, because, you know, if I'm sitting around and I'm scrolling through the internets and the social platforms and I see something come up from certain people, Sean being one of them, I'm going to read it because I know I'm going to get a good laugh out of it and see some trolls.
Yeah, I like that you do it as yourself. You don't have like a Finsta account or like some fake account with some fake name, and that's a big step or a big sign. I think a lot of people do it with the fake guise of being anonymous, and that's where the internet gets ruthless. Not that, you know, that's where it gets to a point that's aggressive, but when you're doing it yourself, I think that there's some pride in that, because you're being yourself, you're being honest, and if people don't like that, then screw them.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, we all know, guys, that the internet, Facebook, as probably the biggest soapbox for people to get up and spew their views on things that they would never have the guts to do face to face in person, although that's changing too if you look at what happened in Washington back in early January. But, you know, and when we talk about the dangerous parts of the internet, that certainly falls into that category in my mind, that it could get very, very dangerous. So we put together some etiquette tips from the internet.
Yes, just some stuff we found. I researched this online and like wanted to see, you know, if anyone came up with some tips.
Read it through. Yeah, why don't you read it through for us and give us some things to think about.
Yeah, yes, sure. So one tip I came across was, before you do it, before you unfriend or unfollow someone, just think it through for a little bit. And if you're in doubt, maybe don't unfriend them right away. Maybe give it a little bit more time. Think about it a little more, you know, before you click that unfriend button. And then another thing is what I mentioned before is consider the stakes and the consequences of that unfriending or unfollowing. Like, is it someone you work closely with, or is it a close friend? Is it a close friend of your partner's, or like one of your family members or theirs? Like, what would the consequences be if you unfollowed or unfriended that person? So that's something to think about for sure. Also, if you go on one of those unfriending sprees, and I'm sure we've all done those, like when we, you know, see how many friends we have, like, that we don't even like know or haven't spoken to in a long time. So don't announce on social media that you're doing that. Maybe people don't want to know.
I can't believe people do that. I've seen that so many times. You know, if I haven't heard from you in the last 30 days, I'm going to be cleaning out my Facebook friends. And, you know, let me know if you still want to be my friend. Like, go ahead, Daphne. I don't like that one.
No, but, you know, I think sometimes it does make sense. Like, if you've reached, you know, the limit of your friends, I think it's like at 5,000, right? And you want to make some room for more people who are sending you friend requests, then it makes sense, like, if you announce it like nicely and saying, you know, guys, like, if you're not getting like any value from my post, like, would you mind unfriending me? Because there are other people who want to send me friend requests.
What is the, there's a friend limit on Facebook?
Yeah, I think it's 5,000.
But then they'd have to start a page, and then it changes the way
Maybe it used to, but nowadays I think you can just follow and people just sometimes just give you that option to follow. They don't even give you the option to friend them.
Yeah.
The last one is like something we've already discussed, that like there are alternatives to unfriending. Like, you can unfollow, you can snooze someone for 30 days. So maybe that's what you want to do first before unfriending someone, unless you just really want to unfriend them and that's legit.
Well, thank you for putting that together, Daphne. Awesome episode. I mean, for everybody listening, this was a bit of a strange day for all of us, but when you hear it, it'll sound like nothing was different. So thanks to the team for putting up with everything. Thank you for listening to this episode of Please See Attached. If you have any questions or comments on this episode, you can email us at psa@getonboard.ca. You can also follow us on social to get an update on when our next episode airs. Our Facebook is Please See Attached. Our Twitter is @seeattachedpod, and our Instagram is @please.see.attached. That's it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you like the episode, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. See you on the next episode of Please See Attached. Bye-bye.